to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Everybody's favorite poetry and technology program has aired for the last 9 years and 2 weeks right here on your campus and community radio station, KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Radiating out to the Sacramento Valley via your FM dial and heard everywhere else via the World Wide Web. On this afternoon's show, we're going to hear some recorded poetry and then an interview live here in the studio with Brett Eugene Ralph. Brett Ralph is a poet, he's a musician, he's a college professor, and he'll be performing this evening at Bistro 33 in Davis, 226 F Street, at the corner of 3rd and F in the Old City Hall building. Starting at 9 p.m., Brett Eugene Ralph will be introducing us to poetry influenced in part by his work now on Brett Eugene Ralph's Kentucky Chrome Review. Brett actually teaches in Kentucky. We'll hear some stories from him in this hour. We'll hear some poems, and we'll hear lots of reasons why you may want to stop by and see Brett Eugene Ralph tonight at 9 o'clock at Bistro 33, and why you will want to stick around for the entirety of this week's edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thank you, Wayne Shorter, for starting us off today. This is Introducing, it's the name of the album. We've got Wayne Shorter along with Lee Morgan on trumpet. Wayne Shorter, of course, on tenor sax. Wynton Kelly on piano. Paul Chambers on bass. And Jimmy Cobb on drums. I'm very pleased to introduce you all to Brett Eugene Ralph. The works of Brett Eugene Ralph have appeared in a great number of publications, including Conduit, Mudfish, Willow Springs, and the American Poetry Review, as well as in the McSweeney's Book of Poets Picking Poets, and The Stiffest of the Corpse, an exquisite corpse reader anthologies. His first full-length collection, he brought a copy with him this evening, Black Sabbatical, was published in 2009 by the impressive Saraband Books. Brett Eugene Ralph grew up playing football and singing in punk rock bands in Louisville, Kentucky. He's taught at the University of Massachusetts, Missouri State University, and the Central Institute of Buddhist Studies in the Himalayas of northern India. He now lives in Empire, Kentucky, teaches at Hopkinsville Community College, and rocks out with his country rock ensemble, Brett Eugene Ralph's Kentucky Chrome Review. As I mentioned earlier, he's going to be reading tonight at Bistro 33 here in the city of Davis. But right now, he's in the studios of 14 Lower Freeborn at KDVS. Brett Eugene Ralph, welcome to Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. So how nice for you that you get to take a California leg of your book tour for your brand new book. And I want to hear more about Black Sabbatical. But first, tell us how you set up this tour. Were you mostly looking for friends or poetry-friendly cities? And tell me about your travels west.
Well, Sarah Band is a really writer-friendly press. And when the book was about to drop, the marketing team at Sarah Band, which is two people, asked me where I would be willing to read. And having played music, I saw this like term with the band. And I'll say, I'll go anywhere you can get me a gig, I'll go. But they wanted to focus on places where I knew someone or had some history and hopefully could count on bringing some people out.
Right.
But they assigned an intern to my book tour for about 3 months. And she, lucky for me, happened to like the book and just went above and beyond. I gave 17 readings last fall. This spring I'm on sabbatical, and I'll probably give twice that many between now and June. But I always love coming to Northern California. I've got a lot of friends here.
Excellent. Now, have you performed in this area as a musician?
I have. I've played in San Francisco once and Oakland once. I was going to try to play a show on this tour, but the venue fell through. And I worked so hard last fall while teaching full-time and touring. I also made a new record last fall, which was logistically and financially idiotic, but aesthetically it worked because the band knew the songs and I knew I'd be too busy this spring. But I'm kind of relieved I didn't set up a musical event because I would have had to rehearse with some folks. I don't really like playing solo. I like to rock it like Chuck Berry and kind of throw together a band wherever I'm playing.
Right, right.
And
you'd have a lot more to carry, I bet.
Yeah. It's been nice to just have a vacation. I read on Saturday in San Francisco. I'm reading here tonight. I'm reading in Berkeley tomorrow, but I'm going to be here for 12 days. So that makes for a pretty nice little vacation.
Absolutely. To some, it'd be work, but I bet it does feel like a vacation to talk about poetry, to read your poetry, meet a lot of people, enjoy faraway cuisine.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I like to say with regard to giving poetry readings, when you've writhed on a filthy stage and been pelted by those Foster's Lager oil cans, reading to 50 quiet, attentive people, sitting silently, listening to your every word is like shooting fish in a barrel. It's a real pleasure.
Excellent. Brett Ralph is my guest. He'll be reading tonight at Bistro 33 here in the city of Davis. That's 226 F Street. If you want to find out more about that, you can head over to poetryindavis.com. So tell me about the extent to which you feel like you have two masters with poetry and your music and what the relationship is between the two.
Well, when I was a young man singing in hardcore bands in the 80s, they were kind of polar opposites. The poetry fed or issued from my more solitary, introspective, lonelier facets of my personality, whereas the music and the lyrics were more exuberant, more aggressive, one might even say more violent, you know, given the genre I was working in. As I've gotten older, and I think it has something to do with probably playing country music, I find my songs are getting more and more crafted and more imagistic, hopefully not too literate, because I think the worst thing you can do in popular music is write what I call grad student lyrics that feel too studied and too mannered. But I also find my poems are getting more colloquial, rowdier, and they really seem to be meeting in the middle after having done them both for over 25 years. They really feel in sync with one another these days.
That's great. Tell me more about the musical bands that you started playing with, the musical genres that really first attracted you as a musician, and where did these formative years take place? Were these in Kentucky or other places?
This was in Louisville. I was born in Illinois, but we moved to Louisville when I was seven.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike a lot of punk rockers, I didn't start with punk rock. I started buying records when I was about 6 years old and was obsessed with the Jackson 5 and Elton John and Queen and, you know, a lot of One Hit Sweet, you know, a lot of pop music of the early 70s. So I think I've avoided that kind of punk rock elitism that you see. And I love pop music. And,
yeah.
And so moving, you know, I started off playing in, I was in the first hardcore band in Kentucky, Malignant Growth, which is a first generation Kentucky punk band. I joined in kind of the second incarnation, and that evolved into kind of a biker rock band called Fading Out, whose one record is still in print via Drag City. Will Oldham, better known as Bonnie Prince Billy, issued that on his Palace Records via Drag City about 15 years ago. And then I had kind of a sloppy rock and roll band called Rising Shotgun for about 10 years. And towards the end of that band, I started writing some country songs. And they didn't really seem to work with that band. And when that band broke up, I figured I was done. I was just writing songs for my own enjoyment. But I got asked to play a songwriters festival in rural Missouri and was really happy with the response I got to my songs. So I started playing some solo shows. I hate playing solo, and most of my songs have places for solos.
Right.
And so I'd play a show with a fiddle player, a lap steel player, a banjo player, harmonica player. And after four or five shows, I had about 10 people who knew my songs, and I decided to go into the studio. And I did that, and that was about 5 years ago. And nobody bit on the record, as I was sure they are. You know, the bidding war did not ensue.
Right.
So I decided to do it the old-fashioned way and put together a live band and start playing shows.
Right.
And lo and behold, that record's going to come out. We hoped it would be ready for this trip, but the artwork got held up. A Louisville Noise Pollution, a Louisville archival punk rock label that's branching into other genres. And, you know, I'm playing country music, but you can tell it's country music played by aging punk rockers. There's a lot of grit and energy to it. We call ourselves the MC5 of country music.
Yeah.
It's pretty raucous and rowdy, and you don't have to be a fan of country music to dig it, I don't think.
Excellent. Brett Eugene Ralph is my guest here in the studios of KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Brett's going to be reading tonight at Bistro 33 in Davis. That is a free all-ages show. No purchase, no ID checking required in order for you to come enjoy some great poetry tonight. And Brett Ralph will be reading from his book Black Sabbatical, which is a 2009 recent release. And tell me a little bit about a poetry reading when it's a Brett Ralph reading. Do you try anything different or gimmicky or
God, I hope not.
Yeah. You save you save the gimmicks for when you've got an instrument in your hand?
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Sarah Gorham, who runs Sarah Band Books, I don't believe she had seen me read when Black Sabbatical came out. Her husband, Jeff Skinner, had, but I was asked to read at a Sarah Band event, and she came up to me afterward, and she was like, wow, you know, now I get it.
Yeah.
And she said, how would you describe your reading style? It's so distinctive. And I said, there's nothing distinctive about it. I read slow and loud. That's the key.
Right.
Most readers read far too quickly, and it's the easiest way, as I'm sure you know, to undermine the authority of your words. But, you know, I think part of it comes from teaching and speaking loudly and wanting students to be able to absorb the material.
Right.
But I think it's also, as a Southern writer with at least one foot in the narrative tradition, though I don't necessarily identify as a narrative poet, I like telling stories, and a lot of people like to call my poems narrative. To me, they're just lyric poems, whether they tell a story or not. They may be in the narrative mode or the confessional mode. They're just lyrics to me.
Right.
But maybe I recognize unconsciously, and I never really thought of this until you asked the question, that maybe I'm trying to overcompensate for the fact that narrative is in some circles considered a bit old hat or anachronistic.
Right.
And maybe I'm reading more slowly so that the music within the lines outside of the story can echo or bubble to the surface a little more, so you hear more music and more with the syntax above and beyond the story it may be cloaked in.
Excellent. That's a good way to put it. And another way of saying that, I suppose, is to remind listeners of the many layers of a poem, mm-hmm. even though typically a narrative poem may be more straightforward and accessible, but that doesn't mean that it's threadbare or without nuance.
Just like a pop song.
Yeah.
You know, you listen to a Jackson 5 song and James Jamerson's thumping the bass underneath. You might just hear the sheen on the on the surface, or the childish exuberance of Michael Jackson's voice, which is stupendous. But underneath that, the interplay of the musicians is incredibly sophisticated.
Right.
And, you know, they say true style is transparent. You're not supposed to think about it.
Yeah.
You just soak it in.
Yeah. Excellent.
I'm not comparing myself. I'm not saying my poems are as good as the Jackson 5, mind you.
Well, you know, you can be audacious here on the radio. let people, if they want to, come make those comparisons themselves tonight at your reading. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, ladies and gentlemen, we'll actually hear a poem by my guest, Brett Eugene Ralph. You're listening to KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. You're back. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Brett Eugene Ralph is here in the studio. We were just talking about our favorite donkey poems that we've written. Evidently, each one of us has written a donkey poem. I don't know that I've read or come across Brett's yet, but I've researched and gathered and discovered one of my old donkey poems. So now, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to get to enjoy two donkey poems, or at least one. The first one here by my guest, Brett Eugene Ralph. And is this the first poem in your book? Is that what you were saying?
It is not. It might be the oldest poem in the book.
Oh, yeah?
But it's not the first.
The book is Black Sabbatical. And if folks wanted to order a copy, would they go through the Sarah Band website?
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. If you order directly from Sarah Band, they make the most money, and the more money they make, the more likely they'll be to publish another book by me. So
right.
Buying it from Sarah Band works.
Or publish another book of poetry at all, because, exactly. You know, it's not a big money-making outfit.
Well, and they say it's a lot easier to get a first book published than a second.
Oh, yeah?
That's what I hear.
Now, say some more about that. Why would that be?
I think maybe people are willing, and I can't say this is true of Sarah Band. They seem pretty devoted to their authors, but I know a lot of my friends who publish books early on, I think, a lot of presses just fall by the wayside.
Right.
Two or three friends of mine publish books with presses that no longer exist.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think people are willing to take a risk on something new and a little odd for a first book, but if they can't sell it, they're going to be a lot less risky for that person's second book.
That's a good point. Something that was true of my first book of poetry, and a reason between the distance between that one and the one I'm working on now, is the first book is often like already a best of collection. You know, because you're thinking, all right, when am I finally ready to turn out this book? Boy, these are great poems. You know, now it's taken me a decade or more of writing and picking out the best of my collection, but now I'm ready to share. And then the sophomore effort. A poet may have some unearned confidence, and the work that comes up in the second book may not equal that of the first.
Mine's totally earned, by the way.
Your confidence.
Yeah.
Oh, I believe you. Let's hear some evidence.
The thing with music, though, is they say that you have 5 years to write your first album and 6 months to write the second one while you're on tour. And
right.
I think in music, you know, we don't tour as hard generally as poets, right. But, you know, you've got your whole career till you get signed to do that first one for sure.
Exactly. All right. So this poem from Black Sabbatical is called Donkey.
It's called Donkey.
Great. Let's hear it.
Donkey. I used to see you out in the field conducting insects with your ears. Sun slowly sharpened the stripe across your shoulders, and you swallowed sleep through your eye holes. Shifting weight to your forelegs, you lifted your head from the tender grass and thrust it forward, long neck bulging, as a series of sharp, moist, muscular spasms, lip sprung, ruptured the air. Underlying all that violence, there seemed to be a kind of laughter. It wasn't malicious. It wasn't apologetic. I closed my eyes and leaned my arms against the fence and listened. Your voice did not disturb me then. It was something that had to happen. Heavy limbs loosed at last from the trunk, ice unfreezing, all at once. I hear it different in the city, mingled with the spit of helicopters, the giggle of broken glass. It's like somebody choking on a car horn or something metal being born.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
I was really interested with that poem, how it takes kind of a an urban slash anti-urban turn right at the end, where the original image of the donkey is inviting as well as being explored really sympathetically, I think.
Mm. Well, that poem's about a donkey that I met in the Himalayas of northern India who lived outside my window, and I would look at him every day. And I've always found donkeys, I think they're beautiful for one thing. They're gorgeous animals. But they look so placid and content, but then they open their mouth and the noise is just incomprehensible.
Right.
It makes no sense at all. And that poem took me back to the most beautiful place I've ever been, a very quiet, solitary place, a place that changed me spiritually forever. But I wrote it after I'd returned to the States and was living in a city. So there was something that felt almost wrong to invoke that donkey in this urban setting. It just didn't jive.
It's interesting. The donkey poem that I grew up loving was by G.K. Chesterton. I think it's called The Donkey. Do you know this poem?
I don't.
Let me see if it's here on my hard drive while we chat.
All right.
I'll be doing just a little bit of multitasking here. It's a wonderful poem that I don't see here. I think I'm going to have to find it online, called The Donkey.
Mm.
And it was an influence on my poem, which I'll share with everyone in a minute as the grand anticlimax to what we've been discussing. But this was a way that you could reintroduce students to the story of Jesus Christ and his ride on the donkey in a non-religious school, which is what I attended. So it was really interesting.
I have a religious donkey story too. One of the monasteries I visited in Ladakh. This monastery was segregated, and the woman I was traveling with had to stay at the nunnery, which was at the foot of the mountain, and I got to go up the mountain to sleep at the monastery that night. And I was happy to hike up the mountain, but the monks decided that I was too fat to do so.
Oh, yeah?
So they went up to the monastery and brought back the Rinpoche's donkey and led me up the mountain riding the Rinpoche's donkey, which I took as a great, great privilege.
Absolutely.
Even though I was embarrassed to do so.
Right, right. And do you think you could have made the hike?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, good. Good for you. I've never ridden a donkey myself, nor have I slept overnight in a monastery. Things to add to my bucket list. Here's a poem called The Donkey by G.K. Chesterton. When fishes flew and forests walked and figs grew upon thorn, some moment when the moon was blood, then surely I was born. With monstrous head and sickening cry and ears like errant wings, the devil's walking parody on all four-footed things. The tattered outlaw of the earth, of ancient crooked will, starve, scourge, deride me. I am dumb. I keep my secret still. Fools, for I also had my hour, one far fierce hour and sweet. There was a shout about my ears and palms before my feet. So that's a G.K. Chesterton
Beautiful.
Poem. Isn't that a nice one?
Amazing. I love it.
So all of you are invited to go check that one out yourself. I just Googled Donkey Chesterton, and it was the first hit. All right. And now, as a promised anticlimax, this one also is a poem about a donkey and Jesus, but in a very different way. The title is The Donkey at the Door, and the title is also the first line. The donkey at the door wanted a word with Jesus. I wished he were here, I said. The donkey spoke with an Eastern European accent. In fact, he sounded like Andrei Cordrescu. Maybe you should check the church on the corner, or the home of old Mrs. Sebastian. He was carrying a basket full of palms. You realize it's October, I reminded him. He just stood there looking at me, for about a minute, and then said, "Thank you," as Dracula would to Igor. I sat back on the futon to stare at the muted TV, and then opened a bottle of red wine. After a swig, I unlocked the door and walked out into the sun to see a trail of occasional fronds heading downtown. That's it.
Hi, Sandy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I've read a poem of mine perhaps three times on the show in the last 9 years.
Wow. I'm honored.
So I don't know if that's my most honorific poem, but
do you know James Tate's prose poem, Good Time Jesus? It's about both Jesus and a donkey.
I don't. I've read a bunch of his work. And was he a professor of yours in New England?
He was. Yeah, he was one of my professors at UMass Amherst, and is still there. I saw him in November when I went up there.
Yeah,
it's a really nice poem.
My brother Oliver has taken classes with James Tate as well. Hmm. And speaking of another connection, I mentioned Andre Cordrescu in that poem, and you've got an Andre Cordrescu connection.
Well, I published one poem in Exquisite Corpse, and
right.
Lucky for me, they included it in their anthology. So,
isn't that nice?
It is. I've never met him, but I like his work on All Things Considered. And
yeah, me too.
And I love Exquisite Corpse.
When my mom stood in line to get him to sign a novel that he had written, he said, "Who should I make this out to?" And she said, "Why don't you make it out to my son, Andy?" And so he wrote to me, "Dearest Andrew, all Andrews are poets. Andre Cordrescu."
Nice.
So that was kind of fun to receive from him.
Did he even know you were a poet?
I think my mom revealed that. She reveals a great deal to strangers.
Moms
about her
like
children.
To do that,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, definitely. I'm chatting this afternoon with Brett Eugene Ralph here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. This is but a sample of what you can enjoy this evening at 9 o'clock at Bistro 33's Poetry Night, 226 F Street here in the city of Davis. There will be an open mic that starts at 10, and if you come on time or early, you could even get a spot on the open mic list. Joe Wenderoth, the poet, novelist, and essayist, as well as UC Davis professor, will also be reading or appearing or performing or heckling, I'm not sure which, at tonight's event. And also the co-host of Dr. Andy's fundraiser show last April, Whitey, who is a big audience favorite. Whitey and his wife are also going to be there tonight, and they'll each be reading something. So it's going to be really an all-star event featuring my guest, Brett Eugene Ralph. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll have some more talk about poetry. Keep it right here on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis.
Thank you. The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019 or via email at root@lugod.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. If you hear longer jazz interludes than would be typical, it's because Brett Eugene Ralph and I are having a fun old time here in the studios of 14 Lower Freeborn, KDBS, where we are chatting about a variety of topics, including Muhammad Ali, donkeys, poetry, country music, used record stores in the area, and the ongoing book tour in support of the book Black Sabbatical. It's a 2009 release on Saraband Books, authored by Brett Eugene Ralph, who will be reading tonight at Bistro 33. So, Brett, I think people at home would love to hear another poem. Do you have one there that you could share with people?
I do, since both the Himalayas and, I guess by extension, Buddhism and Jesus Christ were both mentioned recently. I've got a poem that references both of them.
Excellent.
It's called Emaciated Buddha. Scarcely do we see him, lost in all his wandering, dollop of cold rice in a dirty palm, whatever slumber he can muster, hard won from snakes and rocks and seething rain, the febrile congress of frogs, the unseen unrest of insect worlds, the wind-begotten complaints of the hunted, the haunted creatures perishing in the dark. Like Christ in Grunewald's triptych, he looks like a man who's truly spent a lifetime nailed to a shadeless tree. Skinny arms like tired entreaties, face like a cave, each protruded rib a distinct refusal once and future, beauty of the body discarded like a murky early draft.
Oh, that's neat.
Thanks.
I love what I'm hearing with your poems. There's a certain kind of surprise where it sets off in a particular direction, and then it seems that a really interesting metaphor or set of metaphors kind of helps you go into a place that's unexpected, so that it closes like a box, but also suggests something new at the same time.
Nice. Nothing delights like surprise.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, speaking of such truisms, you've been teaching for a long time. Tell us about where you teach and what sort of classes you teach.
I teach at Hopkinsville Community College in Western Kentucky, which, if you haven't heard of Hopkinsville, or Hoptown, as we like to call it, it's the hometown of Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, of Bell Hooks, the great feminist scholar, and the drummer for the Black Crows.
Oh, yeah?
And I've always wanted to get a shirt made that says, "Welcome to Hoptown, home of Edgar Cayce, Bell Hooks, and the drummer for the Black Crows."
Yeah. I bet it could be made. Do you run into Bell Hooks at the grocery store?
She does not live there.
She doesn't.
Her people are from Hoptown. She went to high school there. She teaches in Berea, Kentucky, for part of each year, and I did bring her back to the campus to read by far our biggest and most widely attended reading, and it was a real good night.
Yeah, I've got a couple of her books. She's someone with a lot of authority, an incredible sense of justice and injustice. I can see why that would be a well-attended reading.
I think it's safe to say she's the only writer I've ever met, and certainly the only one I've brought into HCC that I was totally terrified of. She really has a commanding presence. She has a memoir about growing up in Christian County, Kentucky, called Bone Black, B-O-N-E, that not a lot of people seem to read. It is social criticism on some levels, but it's a very, very beautifully written memoir. And she does a really cool thing that I've never seen anyone else do, which is not to say it hasn't been done. It has a shifting perspective. Some chapters are in first person, some in first person plural, some in third person. And it's kind of a prismatic approach to her own life. It's a really beautiful book. I'm lucky enough to teach African-American literature in Hopkinsville. Hoptown has the highest per capita Black population in Kentucky.
Interesting.
Louisville, where I grew up, is about 28% African-American. Hoptown's fully about 35%. As is the surrounding county. The city and the rural population of Christian County is 35% Black. And the school I teach at, it was born the same year I was, 1966, and had never had an African-American literature class, which I thought was a travesty.
Absolutely.
So I get to teach that, and it might be my favorite class to teach, and we teach that book in it, and my students are really excited to know that a famous world-renowned author came from little old Hopkinsville. That's very inspiring to them.
I'm sure. Does she mention sites and places that your students know?
Not so much. Well, Hopkinsville High School, which she started at Attucks High School when Hopkinsville was still segregated, and she was part of the generation that started in a segregated school and graduated from a desegregated school. But it's in the book, so I don't think it's wrong to mention this on the air. But one of my colleagues saw me with the book and said, "Oh, you know that my cousin used to date Bell Hooks."
Oh yeah.
When they were in high school, and then I finished the book and happened to read the chapter about the loss of Bell Hooks' virginity. And I went up to my colleague a little later and I said, "Did you?" Because she hasn't read this book or hadn't then. And I said, "Did your cousin play basketball?" And she said, "Yes, he did." And I said, "Oh, my God, Bell Hooks lost her virginity to your cousin." And she's like, "Wait till I tell Mama." And it was a great little small town moment.
I'm sure. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I guess one equivalent experience that I had was driving to the San Francisco airport to pick up Amiri Baraka and driving him back to Davis for an event. And he's someone else who has a powerful, authoritative voice, often an angry voice. Mm. And like you were saying about being terrified, I was wondering, you know, what he would think of me and so forth. And I made a few gaffes on the way, asking him if he had ever worked with the female beat poet Diane DePrima. Mm. And he said, well, we have a child together. So, you know, so they did do some work together. But he was, as people know who know him, just a delightful man, very smart, still, you know, a firebrand, but very generous to me, and really enjoyed that that car ride. So it's interesting when you can kind of encounter and converse with your literary heroes, isn't it?
She was nothing but sweet. It was just her reputation and stature intimidated me, you know.
Yeah.
And she doesn't drive either, so we had to work out a way to get her from Berea to Hopkinsville. That was a little tricky, but it was a really nice time.
Excellent.
It was great to bring her in.
Brett Eugene Ralph is my guest this afternoon. We're talking about poetry, Kentucky, African-American literature, and our intellectual and aesthetic heroes here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. If you'd like to ask Brett Eugene Ralph a question, you could call us here. We've got 10 minutes of the show left here at KDBS. The number is 530-752-2777. You can also just stop by Bistro 33 tonight, for Brett will be reading from his new book, Black Sabbatical, at 226 F Street. That reading starts at 9, though the room will probably fill up, so if you want to get a table, or if you want to sign up to participate in the open mic that starts at 10, I encourage you to show up early. We're going to hear now from Ricardo Montalban, and we'll be back in a moment with more of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
There are many ways to measure success. For the Shriners, it's the nearly 700,000 children with orthopedic and burn problems that they've helped. This is Ricardo Montalban. For over 80 years, the Shriners have provided state-of-the-art medical care to kids all over North America, totally free of charge. There is a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child that the Shriners might be able to help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Andy with an important message. The state of California honors our war veterans. If you're a veteran, apply for benefits that you deserve, like CalVet home loans, the Veterans Home of California, or college fee waivers for your family. For more information, log on to www.cdva.ca.gov or call the California Department of Veterans Affairs at 1-800-952-5626. We're coming up on the closing minutes of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, during which time we've enjoyed a conversation with Brett Eugene Ralph. I'll remind you that Brett has had his poetry appear in a great number of publications, including Conduit, Mudfish, Willow Springs, and the American Poetry Review. We spoke earlier of McSweeney's book of poets picking poets and The Stiffest of the Corpse, an exquisite corpse reader anthology.
Field, too, which I've been trying to get in for years, and I'm really thrilled to have finally shown up in Field.
That we were talking about big deals, and how it's a big deal that you're reading at Moe's tomorrow night. It's a big deal to get into Field as well.
I would think so. My favorite working poet, Franz Wright, has been showing up in there for years, and that just always made me want to get, and I like that it's a small mag. You
right.
know, when I read a poetry or literary magazine, I want to read it in a sitting.
Yeah.
And, you know, 70, 80, maybe 90 pages. And I like that Field's really manageable. It's and it's just got a really clear aesthetic. It always has.
Yeah, definitely.
And the Field translation series is just dynamite.
There is a chance, I'll call it a 25% chance, that you'll get to meet Franz Wright's mother at the reading tonight.
Wow.
Yeah. She's a she lives here in the Davis area, and she is
wonderful.
A memoirist as well. We were talking about memoirs before.
Wow.
And she comes to the readings occasionally. And I'm going to try to get her on the radio show at some point.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
So if she's there, I'll make sure to introduce you.
Cool.
Being a that one of her sons is a hero of yours. So you'll be reading at Moe's in Berkeley tomorrow evening.
At 7:30 with Jason Morris, who's a San Francisco poet who edits Big Bell.
Uh-huh.
A really nice kind of handmade magazine. He gets some really nice submissions. It's a cool mag, and I'm excited to read with him. He's a good friend.
Excellent. And then after Berkeley, as your book tour continues, do you go north or south?
I go back home, and then I'm doing about 8 days in Missouri. Well, I've got two readings in Louisville in late January and early February, and then I'm going to be traveling to four different places in Missouri in February. And then March, I get to go up to New York and back to Massachusetts.
That's wonderful. So it's kind of like a chance to reunite with all your friends, catch up with them. Have them come out and give you your props in bookstores and cafes. And
make a lot of new friends.
Absolutely. Well, if you want to be Brett Eugene Ralph's new friend, you can find him on Facebook. Do you Facebook friend people who are admirers and just say, hey, I enjoy your work?
Sure. I'll be anybody's friend. You know, I don't even screen. You know, if somebody wants to be my friend, I consider it a privilege. And that's in every arena of my life.
Excellent. So if you need a new friend, Brett Eugene Ralph will be reading tonight at Bistro 33 at 9 o'clock from his book Black Sabbatical. And don't you have an album coming out? Is that this year?
Yeah, if you really want to be my friend, you can buy my band's record when it comes out next month. I spent 2 years and a whole lot of money. I won't mention the figure because it's embarrassing. Somewhere in the midst of the process, I thought I was making Tusk.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, and I got pretty much most of my friends, some of whom are a lot more well known than I am when it comes to music, to guest on the record. I wanted to make one of those sprawling country rock records with when every friend you've ever partied with makes a cameo and
sure.
plays or sings on. There's 21 people on the album.
That's
and
great.
It's a lot of fun, and it was kind of. My impetus, it's country music, but my real impetus was Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review
mm-hmm.
from the mid-70s. Just a big, sprawling, kind of epic, shambling, grandiose mess.
Right.
And I really like that kind of music.
So. Remind folks what the name of the album is and the name of your musical group.
Well, when the name of the band is Brett Eugene Rouse Kentucky Chrome Review, there's not really room for a title to the album.
Yeah. So it's self-titled, so to speak.
It is, and it'll be on Noise Pollution Records out of Louisville.
All right. And is that Noise Pollution Records.com? Do you know their website offhand?
I do not. And they're probably best known for a comp called Bold Beginnings, which chronicles the first wave of Louisville punk rock bands, which Malignant Growth, my first band's on there. They've been chronicling the Louisville punk scene for years, but are branching out into other genres.
Excellent. And so that is Noise Pollution Records. If you Google them, I bet you'll find them right away. Brett Eugene Rouse, this has been a real pleasure. I look forward to your reading tonight at 9 at Bistro 33. And thanks very much for coming this afternoon to appear on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks for having me. I'm in your debt.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you stick around because we've got some great music programming coming up, including a radio show that is starring Springy, DJ Springy, Time to Get Away. We get a visit from DJ Springy every Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock, and that's just about what time it is now. My name is Dr. Andy. I want to thank my guest, Brett Eugene Rouse, and maybe I'll see some of you all tonight at his poetry reading at Bistro 33 here in the city of Davis. Otherwise, look for me next week for another edition